I'm Scott Bourne, joined by my friend Rich Harrington, and you're listening to the Triple Exposure Podcast, all about HDR, panoramic, and time-lapse photography. And Rich, today we're going to talk about a controversial topic, but that's okay. We'll do that regularly on this show. We're big boys. We're going to ask the audience to put on their big boy and big girl panties and say, look, we're going to talk about this in an adult manner. We're going to talk about the folks who think that by making something harder, they have somehow made it better.
Yeah, somehow that using technology cheapens the quality of your end photograph.
Yes, because we all know that if you wear an artist beanie, particularly if you wear it backwards, and you shoot with some archaic film that's hard to find, and you use some camera that barely works, you are an artiste. But
yes,
if you use a nice camera and Photoshop and don't work for 27 hours in the field to make an image, it can't be good.
Right. It's somehow it seems people have embraced this idea that you have to have blood and sweat and, you know, maybe a small sacrifice in order to get a photo that's great. That's somehow and you know, I learned this early on. The end result is not how much you impress your peers by the amount of effort you went through. The end result is do your clients or your customers or your audience react to the image? And, you know, I've had some incredible images that people have reacted positively to that came off of my cell phone camera. And it's like, well, okay. it goes back to the art of storytelling or capturing that image and really embracing it. But I keep running into these purists, you know, they call people like me a button pusher because I like to use software to bring my vision to life.
Yeah. That, and I think that as a group, it's no problem to me. If you want to work harder than you need to make your image, I got no issue with that. But don't denigrate me because I'm looking for the easier way to get it done. Because particularly for you and I, Rich, it may be different for some in our audience, but we both make a living at this. And so time is of the essence. If I have to work 2 hours longer to get a picture than I should, that's 2 hours I'm not getting paid any extra for. And you know what? I have never met a single client, maybe you have, I doubt it, who said, you know, I really appreciate the fact that that you worked all this extra time and I'm going to give you extra money.
Yeah, the days of time and materials contracts are definitely going away. And, you know, in many cases, you're going for that impact of the image. You know, no one cares how hard you worked. All they care is the results that are on the screen or on the printed page. And so if you embrace some of these things, it's amazing. I mean, the innovations in Photoshop, the innovations in some of these third-party plugins are just there. And, you know, whether it's time-lapse, HDR, panoramic, it has just gotten so much easier. For example, when I started out with panoramic photography, you know, I had the old Caden rigs and the nodal point and, you know, floating the camera right over the center of the tripod and the exact hard clicks with the metal disc. So it was exactly a 15-degree increment or a 20-degree increment as I turned around and we would do all this work. And, I mean, was carrying all this extra weight. And then one day, I want to say it was maybe two versions of Photoshop ago when they sort of came out with the photo merge technology and it actually started working. I was just like, well, I wonder if I just kind of do this. And, you know, like I still had it on the tripod and I turned it around and, oh, well, that pretty much worked. And then I was like, well, I wonder if I do everything wrong and I shoot this, you know, not portrait but landscape and I just twist at the waist and I sort of do it. It's like, well, that pretty much worked too. You know, there's certainly advantages and it runs faster as the software when you shoot it right. But that was like a turning point for me when I said, oh, I could either be obsessing over the technique or I could be focusing on capturing the moment, knowing that I have this great technology safety net that could sort of fix some of my photographic sins after the fact.
So I agree mostly with everything that you said on that, and I really believe in general that the image is the thing I care about. I do want to say that I think it's if you can apply best practices, you should. I mean, I don't know that you need to worry about nodal points. My friend Ron Brinkman was the first person to say that to me, Ron being sort of like the author of the special effects Bible out there. But, you know, nodal points and me don't always get along.
Right.
You know, and so here's what I do. I try to use a level tripod. I don't get out there and bring engineering teams to make sure it's dead level. I just try to get a level and I use a bubble level. And, you know, that looks pretty close. And I and I try to work with panning heads that have degree marks on them. Not that I sit and lock them down or click on this one or that one, but it just gives me a little better idea, and I get close, and you know, and then I kind of forget about it. I try to get as close as I can. I used to be like you. I used to spend more time trying to be precise, and then I realized the software's better than I am. So I don't. You know, I'm not lazy about it, but I'm also not going to brag that this panoramic photograph took me 27 hours of my life. Because here's the real news, folks. Nobody cares.
Right. It's just how does it look, you know? And yeah, I mean, I found that when I stopped being, you know, I agree with you. You know, you need to learn how to shoot right. You know, there is a technique to doing panoramic photography. You know, we've got tutorials on the website. And you want to do it right. But if you're spending so much time that you're like, wait a minute, you know, I think I'm 2 degrees off on that. Let me start over. Well, you've missed the moment, or the clouds have moved so much that you're getting, you know, distracting images as you start to stitch. It's like when you start to realize, like, okay, you know, I'm going to do this. I'm going to pack my gear. I'm going to be lean. I can go out there. I can get this. Okay, I've practiced a little bit. Now let's just focus on the photography side. Let's get it. It's just so much more liberating. And you know, I think this is also – part of the reason is this mind shift was really comes when people stopped thinking like film photographers and started thinking digital, which is not, oh, you know, 22 cents, 22 cents, 22 cents. All of a sudden it was like, just keep shooting. Hey, you know what? I didn't like how that one turned out, but I liked how this one turned out. And you just find yourself throwing out the old rules and being willing to experiment a little bit more. Like, well, what happens if I tried to do an HDR panoramic? Would that work? Oh, look, it did. You know, it's cool.
I remember the first time I tried to do an HDR that I intended to make black and white, and everyone looked at me like I was a freak.
Right.
They're like, why would you do that? I'm like, well, I just think there was more texture, and we get different gradations in the black and white, and I like it. And you know, it's, I think it really boils down to what's in your mind's eye. So I judge photography not based on the technique that people use to make the image. I judge photography based on what's the story here, and is this an accurate representation of what the photographer was going for? It doesn't have to be an accurate representation of what was there. It has to be an accurate representation of what it was going for. I mean, you can look at some of the most famous artists in our world, you know, Gauguin, Renoir. You know, you can't tell me that, you know, that the things they painted are 100% literal. You know, all you have to do is look at some of these paintings from the Impressionists. There's no literal thing. And, you know, take a picture of a waterfall, use a slow shutter speed, get the cotton candy effect. That doesn't look real, because I've never seen a waterfall that looks like that, but people don't seem to complain about that. They do complain when you use HDR or whatever. I just want to quickly swing this around to talk about this from the film photographer's perspective, Rich, and to show you that there's nothing new under the sun. I mean, Ansel Adams' famous quote is the negative is the score, and the print is the performance of the score, as in a musical score. And Ansel shot everything he shot with the darkroom in mind. He's like, okay, I'm going to use – he created his version of the zone system. He gets credited with making the zone system. He didn't, but he created his version of it so that he could move – you know, the black point 2 stops to the left or to the right to get the print he wanted. So he was doing this stuff consciously and then manipulating in the darkroom. And of course, now because it was film, everyone says, oh, that's pure. But it's no different than what we're doing with software.
No, it's just, it's embracing technology. And one of the things that I've noticed, you know, part of my living has always been to be an educator, yours as well. And, you know, I've worked with people as young as high school students all the way up to people who are retired from their normal jobs and are getting into photography either out of passion or as a second or a third or a fifth career as they, you know, finish their traditional career. And one of the things I see is that somehow computer literacy has become a bad word. Like, people think of, oh, well, you know, that's my data tech, or that's my assistant, or I'll hire somebody to do the Photoshop work, and somehow that's not part of it. But the simple truth of the matter is that, you know, back when you were a film photographer and you had mastered the darkroom, well, the darkroom of old with chemicals and, you know, paper and all those things is pretty much a dead technology, you know, and the new technology is a digital darkroom. And spending time to balance that out, spending money to enhance that, just like you would the physical room, is very liberating. But you have to stop seeing it as the job of the assistant or the job as that recent college grad and as something that you embrace, you know. And I think with that, if people would just accept, hey, it doesn't have to be hard. I don't have to master every single feature. I just want to get those images that I see in my mind's eye out. And to get there, you just try different technology. You try different tools. You see what works for you. And you accept that if it's easy and fun and you like it, it's good. If it's hard and you don't like it, then do a tutorial or take a class. But don't just sort of write it off as like, well, somebody else will do that. Or, you know, that's not pure photography. You hit it on the head. Darkroom was technology too. It just was analog technology.
Yeah. The bottom line is this. 100 years from now, you and I will be dust. And most of the people we know will be dust. If we're lucky enough that our picture survived, do you envision folks in a, you know, 22nd century, you know, coffee shop, if there is such a thing, going, I wonder if he used HDR to make this? Or do you think they'll just go, wow, that was a cool waterfall back then?
Right.
You know, I mean, that's the thing. Here's what I think. I think if you've got a technology story or a film story or an artiste's story that you've got to tell to support your photograph, the photograph doesn't stand on its own and it's no good.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's always interesting when you're talking to your peers to, like, you know, share the. It's like, you know, let's take a look to a parallel medium that's also filled with artistes, right? You've got DVDs out there of great Hollywood films, and they'll have the behind-the-scenes montages or the director's tracks and all of those things. But really, you know, does anybody give out awards for best director's track or best, you know, editor's commentary or behind-the-scenes vignette? It's like that stuff is staring at your belly button and then inviting other people who are in the same industry who also like to stare at their own belly buttons to go, oh, well, that was really interesting how they did that. I mean, every once in a while, the interesting vignette, and it's not to say that we shouldn't pull the curtain back to sometimes demystify things, especially as a teaching moment.
Right.
But impressing other photographers or other photography enthusiasts versus just making a visual impact on everyday people looking at your pictures, hey, use technology. If technology helps you, why shy away from it?
Yeah, and what will happen now is we'll get emails attacking us because we made fun of artistes. But guess what? The artistes make fun of us.
Yes.
It boils down to you're no better than me, I'm no better than you. It's the image that counts. We'll all go to the same place, the grave. So, you know, after that, it's not going to be how we made it. It's going to be what we made. It's the how conversations, Rich, take place amongst, like you said, peers. We go to Photoshop World. We go to Mac World. We go to CES. We go to WPPI, PPA. We go to all these different shows, and we talk about this stuff. But most people realize we're just a tiny, tiny sliver of a tenth of a millionth of a billionth of a trillionth of a percent of the world. Everybody else is yawning.
Right.
They just don't care. They're like, yeah, that's a pretty – I mean, I'll never forget. I went to Alaska, to remote Alaska, off Kodiak Island to photograph coastal brown bears in 2008, the largest bears in the world. They're bigger even than polar bears. They're a version of grizzly bear that's just monstrous. And I was – and there's nothing but air between me and the bear. We're in Kafflia Bay, the same place where Timothy Treadwell got killed, the Grizzly Man Diaries guy. I mean, if the bears want to kill me, they run 35 miles an hour and I don't. So I'm just going to die. So I'm just up – I'm up there and a bear gets a little mad at me and – starts, you know, giving me the signs and does a bluff charge, and he's like 50 feet away, and I start backing up, and I'm like, you know, I can just see it now. If I survive this, I can tell this great story about the picture. But nobody cares. They're like, yeah, it's a great bear picture. Did you see the Cubs score? I mean, you know, it's like, did the Red Sox win? It's only important to me and maybe a few photographers that are interested in going there. If you are caught up in process and not result, in my opinion, you're doing yourself a disservice. It's up to you to live your life how you want. But what we're going to do on this show is talk about both. But, you know, I'm always going to be teaching about the results, and I'm only going to describe the process in so much as to get to that result. And then it's up to you however you want to do it. I mean, we believe in HDR, panoramic, and time-lapse photography. Those are all kind of moving, different ways to do photography. I think imagery is changing fast, and I think these new kinds of technologies are going to play a big role. You can either stick your head in the sand and say, oh, I won't do that because it's not pure.
Yeah, and I think
you actually hit it.
I think you brought up a good point there. What I like about all three of these types of photographs is that they're combining multiple images into an end result. And what's really interesting is that traditional photography was really built around the physical print. And, you know, I'm looking at all these iPad and magazine apps. The use of panoramic photography is exploding. People want the ability to pan around and look at an environment. Or, you know, the use of video is huge. And time-lapse is such a logical jump from the world of still photography to the world of video. And it's beautiful what you can create. And so there's this huge demand for immersive images. And no matter what anybody thinks about HDR, the simple truth is that most people like them better. Most normal people. It's more intense. It's like we've lived in a society where we become so overwhelmed by so much noise and garbage out there that when a breathtaking, startling, dramatic image is there, it pulls people in. It's like, you know, you see these galleries, like, for example, in Vegas, giant gallery of HDR images, and you're seeing them pop up. You know, these are showing up more and more because well, people pay a lot of money to buy these, and they mount them. I just watched a fan video of your friend Trey. Somebody had bought one of his prints on one of those large metal imprints for their office, and they were so excited by it that they produced a video and posted it out to YouTube about their new print they ordered. When have we seen people say, I'm so excited. I just got this new photograph from my favorite photographer, and I'm going to record a video about opening the box and posting it on the wall. It's because people have this passion. And they love how these really powerful, either immersive or capturing time or just capturing more than the camera could see. You could see that stuff with your eyes. You know, I love Trey's explanation of, you know, what he loves about HDR, how he could see this great stuff. But when he shoots it with the camera, it's not there. But HDR lets him go back to what he's seeing in his eye as well as what he's seeing in his mind's eye to really bring that moment to life. And I think that's what's beautiful. You know, you could hate it, and trust me, any technology that's out there, someone will find a way to overdo it or abuse it or use it badly. And yes, it can be obnoxious. But you brought up the use of HDR for black and white. I do almost all my black and white photography with HDR these days. I love it. Such, you know, black and white is all about contrast and tonal ranges. You mean I've got more to work with? Awesome. Why not?
Regarding the HDR thing, we'll wrap up on this because I think it just really hits this home. It's like, in a discussion that was on Trey's forum, in fact, I believe, which I was participating in, it just became very clear. You know, when it comes to HDR, the general public loves it, and it's only the photographers who hate it. And the ones who hate it fall into a couple of camps. One, they don't know how to do it, so it's easier to hate on it. Or two, they do know how to do it, but they've decided it's cheating. You know what? You can decide it's cheating for yourself, but you can't decide it's cheating for me. So you do what you want to do, and I'll do what I want to do, and we'll let the public decide. And if they want to buy my HDR photographs and yours don't sell because you don't use HDR, that's on you. I mean, we don't need to be fighting amongst each other over this stuff. We should try to figure out what we all enjoy, promote that, and then where we have common ground as photographers, let's live there. And then if you like HDR or don't like HDR or whatever, that's fine. If you think panoramic stitching is cheating as compared with going out and buying an old-fashioned panoramic film camera, whatever. But I think it's just we need to bring the conversation home by saying, you know, photography is about the picture. Period.
Right.
It's about the picture. It's about the final product. Or in the case of time lapse, it's about the moving picture. We are here to help people make these images in a way that'll be compelling and meaningful to people, and hopefully that others who don't know how to do all this will enjoy. And that's it. That's all we want to do. That's our crime. Our crime is to try to help people to figure this out. So if you're one of those who hates on HDR or whatever, we're just going to ask you point blank, give it a chance. Let us show you what we're doing with it. If you decide you don't like it after that, that's fine. If you think video's not for you, you don't need time lapse, let us surprise you with a couple of ways that we're doing. And if you've never tried the panoramic stuff and seen how these immersive photographs can change people's opinions about things, I mean, the panoramic photographs of the old, areas that before they were national parks that helped Congress make them national park change people's minds. This is important and powerful stuff, Rich, and we're making fun a little bit in this podcast, and we're being deliberately controversial, but the point is that we do want to do this because we think it matters.
Well, I think that's it. I think what's important is that people actually embrace this idea that they can go ahead and make better images. They could use technology to help them. And, you know, the website's not judgmental. If you're interested in only one area of that content and not another area, not a problem. You know, you can go ahead and use just that part of it. But, you know, nobody's going to say, oh, at the end of the day, how did you make that image? They're just going to say, wow, I like that picture. Or, oh, I want to buy that picture. I'd like to license that picture. Use whatever you can to get there.
And conversely, if they don't like it, you whining about how hard it was to do isn't going to change their mind.
Right. Yeah, that's what I always love. It's like I used to always like put the little behind the scenes thing when I was posting work samples and stories about how I got the shot. And I still do that for other photographers. But, you know, when I just post pictures for family or friends or, you know, I just want to share an image out there, I don't put anything about it other than maybe where I took it. So people can go, oh, I want to go see that place. That looks interesting to me, you know, and that's it. You know, it should stand on its own. You know, I think in many ways, when you feel the need, you know, when you feel the need to put the 1,000 words with the picture instead of letting the picture do the 1,000 words, there's something wrong with your picture.
Yeah. It's very funny. I mean, I do a lot of critiquing at workshops and people like they go into these explanations like, stop. Just let me look at the picture. I don't.
Yeah.
If I got to hear your story about how hard this was to get, I agree with you. We do need to tell these stories to other photographers that we're teaching. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about to the general public, though. My main point being that it sort of reminds me of American Idol. Okay, I hate to admit it, but this year American Idol was a guilty pleasure for me. I actually watched almost every show, and I particularly like to watch.
The question I have for you, though, is did you call in and vote?
I'm not that bad.
Okay.
I'm not that bad. I did never vote. But I watched – I particularly always enjoy the first shows when they're dealing with the idiots and the people who can't sing and the people that are there to just get publicity. I love those actually the best. And but occasionally someone comes on there who is sincere, who thinks they're good and who's not, or who wants to be good is more to the case and is who not. And when they say – you know, I'm sorry, this isn't for you. And the person goes, but I work so hard and I want this with all my heart. It's like, well, you wanting it and working hard doesn't mean you hit the result. It's not enough. You've got to actually do it. You know, you and I get judged by our clients based on the final imagery we provide. Nothing else matters to them. They don't pay for excuses. They don't care if the sun was in the wrong place. They don't care how hard it was to get. They're just like, get me a picture of this. Here's the money. We do it or we don't. If we don't, they get somebody else. And that's, you know, these technologies that we cover on this show make all of that stuff easier for both of us. So we're hoping to share that. So we know this is a little bit of a controversial episode. We probably won't be so preachy most of the time. But we do have a very agnostic website I'd like to direct you to. And that's 3exposure.com. And that is updated Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And occasionally we do more often. We have posts up there about one of the three topics. And, you know, we're just getting started. But over time, there'll be quite a few posts on every topic. So as Rich said, if you like HDR but you don't care about time-lapse, look at all the HDR posts. If you like time-lapse, don't care about HDR, do the reverse.
Everything is tagged and categorized. So it's as simple as just looking at the right-hand column and clicking on the word that interests you. And it's all free, too. So
Nothing to sign up for. You don't have to give us any information. Just come for free.
Yeah.
And we're going to be announcing a contest in the next episode of the podcast and on the blog at 3exposure.com that you all are going to be very interested in for a really big prize. Some of you may know that I tend to give stuff away. I'm not going to tell you what it is today. I'm just going to tell you need to be hanging out with us because coming up soon, and I mean very soon, we're going to talk about a very cool contest where you can win something I'm pretty sure you're going to want. So stay tuned for that at 3exposure.com. You can follow us on Twitter at 3exposure. And individually, you can follow Rich and I and find out what we're doing besides this. Rich, where should people go to find out what you're up to?
There's my blog, Richard Harrington blog. And the thing for everybody when they're out there looking, since this is audio and not video, it's just the number 3 and then the word exposure after it.
So, thank you very much for pointing that out.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah. 3exposure.com.
Yeah. So come on over. But yeah, my blog is just Richard Harrington blog, and my company is Red Pixel, REDPIXEL. So I'm not too hard to find, as you would just say, just Google me. I pop up pretty easy. I'm not the British actor, although seeing who he gets to date, that would be okay.
Yeah, you'll take that. Okay. Well, you can find me at photofocus.com every single day, over at Going Pro Monday through Friday, goingpro2010.com, and of course on Twitter at Scott Bourne, SCOTTBOURNE. We invite your comments at the 3exposure.com website. And we're not going to put out a publishing schedule on the podcast just yet because we're just getting our feet wet, but you'll hear from us at least monthly and hopefully much more often starting soon. In the meantime, we'll look for you on the very next episode of the Triple Exposure Podcast.